You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Federal Premium Ammunition. Now, this company has been around for, man, like over 100 years. And these guys make loads for just about any bird that you can hunt. And because it's spring, that means it's turkey season. And they have turkey loads for 10 gauge all the way to 410s and everything in between. And they call it their Federal Heavyweight TSS, right? This is a heavyweight tungsten super shot load, and that's their turkey load, right? And it says here that their tungsten alloy material is 18 grams per cubic centimeter density. That means it is 22% higher than standard tungsten and 56% more than lead. And what this, long story short, what this does, it allows that load to travel at higher velocities for longer distances, right? And so that makes it a very consistent and very deadly turkey shot. So make sure that you guys go and check out the turkey shots over at federalpremium.com and pick them up wherever you buy your ammunition. These guys are all over the place. And also be sure to go to federalpremium.com for their blog and their podcast.
All right, here we go. Welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Riker, and today I have on Jake Mushaney from Unknown Munitions. This show is a lot of fun for me to record. I've been a reloader for a long time. I've been a shooter for a long time. It's something that I really, really enjoy doing, is getting the rifles out. And I'm not much of a handgun guy, but I do love to shoot rifles and tinker around a little bit with some long-range stuff. And like I said, I like to reload. And reloading is, it's kind of difficult, right? It's a process, at least for those of you that do reload or you know, have dabbled in it in the past. It's a process, and it's very, very time-consuming. And I brought Jake on here to talk about Unknown Munitions and what Unknown Munitions can do for you or for me or anybody that reloads. So what he does is he makes precision ammo. He reloads precision ammo using the best of components out there to create good quality ammo. We talk all about it today throughout the podcast, his process, the precision equipment that he uses. And then I have some listener questions that I had asked on Instagram, just through Instagram story or whatever. And I included a few of those questions into the podcast too. And Jake answers those as well as some of my questions. So really good show. I really appreciate Jake coming on and talking with us. And I personally just ordered a bunch of ammo from Jake so that I can give it a try and see what I think about it. I got some for my 300 Win Mag, and then a build that I've got coming up that's a 6.5 PRC. So I'm really looking forward to trying both of those. And yeah, anyway, here we go. Quick word from the sponsor, and then we'll jump into it with Jake. Enjoy. Backcountry Rookies is designed to prepare, inspire, and educate hunters to head west for a backcountry big game hunt. Join us in our journey as we prepare and educate ourselves as well as others to be prepared for the hunt and to never stop learning. The Backcountry Rookies podcast is proudly brought to you by Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting. It's the most comprehensive elk hunting education platform that you can find anywhere. From learning and knowing how to call elk to packing an elk out of the woods, University of Elk Hunting covers every step of the elk hunting process. Use the promo code ROOKIES and save $20 on your membership today. Now let's get to the show. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Today is, this is going to be super fun for me, no doubt. I love talking about ammunition. I love talking about shooting. And I got just the guy to talk about those topics today. So Jake Mushaney is on from Unknown Munitions. Jake, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. So let's just dive right in and let's talk a little bit about who's Jake Mushaney, and then we'll talk about Unknown Munitions before we start talking about bullets and all the good stuff we got. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so yeah, Jake Mushaney, started Unknown Munitions about 6 months ago and really looking to fill kind of a hole in the market for shooters with, you know, some unique ammunition combinations that are not really available off the shelf, and maybe looking for some, you know, more precisely loaded ammunition when you've kind of, you know, reached the limit of the capabilities of factory ammunition, and maybe that 50 ES is not working well for you anymore on your 1,000-yard shoots, and you're looking to step it up a notch. We kind of fill that hole in the market a little bit, I think.
I think so. And just browsing through your website, you can tell that there's a lot of, like, you're using quality products, right? Your brass is good quality. The bullets that you're putting out are good quality. You guys aren't just buying Remington core locked and throwing them in some old brass, right? You're using good quality components with powders that work. So,
and really to that end, it's really, you know, whatever the customer wants. If, you know, maybe the ADG, Lapua, Peterson brass kind of approach for quality isn't what you're looking for, and you have a specific load developed that you want to get duplicated, I mean, we will literally order in any components and, you know, load them the same way you would at your specification. So we actually have a hand loading request form on the website where you can fill out all your details there, and we get back to you with an estimate. So pretty cool setup.
Yeah. So I don't think you load them the same way I do, and I think your equipment is a little bit better, and we're going to touch on that in a minute. But when did you first see – I wanted to go back to a little bit to talk unknown munitions a little bit more. When did you first see that gap that you're talking about where shooters weren't being provided with that best quality ammunition? And then what made you decide to jump on it and say, I'm the guy that can fill that gap?
Well, I started down the – you know, the introduction to hunting. I wanted to take my son out hunting and kind of show him a pastime, you know, maybe that I didn't get to do as a child. And, of course I get real in depth into topics and gear and whatnot, and a lot of research, and start reading about rifles and cartridges kind of when I was first starting. And, I arrived at the cartridge I decided I wanted to shoot was 300 Norma. And there's not a lot of options, at least at that time, there were almost no options for either production rifles or factory ammunition. So reading into it about bullet choices and whatnot, and just the small amount of choices in the market, I decided to start hand loading. And once I went down that rabbit hole, I'm very particular and anal about little details, and it just kind of spiraled out of control from there. that literally is how it started, so.
I think that's a fantastic round, and I had one for a couple of years that was one of the most accurate rifles I've ever put my hands on. It was a fantastic gun.
We love it here.
Yeah.
My favorite. Although I will say, you know, to that end, that after shooting some larger 30 caliber, which I didn't think there was many larger than the 300 Norma, but, you know, things like the 300 Terminator, there is kind of a, you know, it is catching my eye for sure. I mean, we might have to run that cartridge next year, being that I already have my Bat Machine HR custom action, and, you know, with the Lapua bolt face, it kind of gives us some different options. So we might have to try that out next year. We'll see.
There you go. Run them head to head and see which one you like best.
Yeah. Well, actually, I know what the 300 Terminator will do with a 245 Burger. You know, 3,100 feet a second is kind of maxed out for that cartridge, you know, safely and efficiently. So if I can get, it'll be a direct comparison. So if I can get 3,025, maybe 3,050, if I push it hard, you know, out of the 300 Norma, then you kind of have, you know, apples to apples comparison on what the capabilities are. So we will see this year for sure.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. 3,100 out of with a 245 grain bullet. Phenomenal.
Yeah. I ran the numbers yesterday. It's supersonic out to, I think it was 2,200.
Jeez.
Supersonic to 2,200 yards. That's impressive.
That's very impressive. Very impressive. And what about the Norma?
Well, if I was running the 230 Burger Hybrid, and that was running at 3,140 feet per second, it's around 1,900 yards.
Okay.
So pretty similar.
Yeah. Pretty similar. But okay. So let's dive into this, because I have a lot of topics I want to talk about. I also asked the Instagram followers to ask us a few questions, and I've got some other stuff that we're going to get to later on in the show from some of the Instagram listeners and followers. But what the first question I want to ask is, what makes precision ammo better than factory ammo? Why would I want to choose that precision ammo, pay a little bit of a premium to get that precision ammo? Why would I do that?
Well, I think we could kind of start that question with, hand-loaded ammunition is definitely not always better than factory. And the reason I say that is because I've had so many questions and from hand-loaders that have, you know, basically tried it out in their garage, and they've ordered kind of some beginner equipment, and they're trying to put some ammunition together. Let's just take 6.5 Creedmoor, for example, and they just can't seem to get the same results or as good of results as they do from the Hornady factory ammunition. So to that end, hand loading your ammunition doesn't always mean it's going to be better. There's a certain amount of precision and repeatability from a factory process using machines that unless you're a skilled hand loader, maybe you can't even achieve that level, you know, in your garage. But once you get to that level where you can repeat what factory ammunition can do, you kind of step it up a notch. And that's really where unknown munitions would come in, is when you're, you know, when that factory box of 6.5 Creedmoor with that 40 or 50 ES just simply doesn't cut it anymore. We kind of take that to the next level. We're really using the best of all equipment and tooling available to produce, you know, single digit ESSD ammunition for nearly the same cost as what you're going to spend off the shelf. So precision ammo, I mean, it's hand loaded. We're using the best tooling possible. We're throwing kernel accurate powder throws, meaning that the single kernel of powder, you know, accurate under 10 seconds with the AND FX120i and auto trickler setup. We're using the best presses, the best dies. We just added Primal Rights competition primer seeders, a couple of those to the shop. So now we're seeding primers within a thousandth of an inch of each other. So it's really just the best tooling possible, hand loaded one at a time. Yeah, you can't get much better than that.
You're absolutely right. There is limitations on what you can do. Like for me, example, I have RCBS rock chucker single stage press, right? And then I've got a powder throw and all of that stuff. And I can't touch the accuracy that I can get out of some of the Burger factory ammo. And that's why I'm going to step it up to the next level. So you and I've been talking over time. I'm going to start running some of your 215 Burger ammo that you load in the ADG brass. And I'm super excited to see the difference between the two. I know what I can do personally on my reload press, and it's that Burger ammo is better than what I can do. And I'm super excited to be able to see what your precision process will do out of that 215 Burger.
Actually, I had a customer recently, I won't say no names or anything, or even the cartridge, but let's just say that he ordered some ammunition from us. I guess I'll say it's 28 Nosler. He ordered some 28 Nosler Hornady brass ammunition, and you know, he shot half minute group out of his rifle and basically said, I don't know what you're doing here, but you know, I can't get that same accuracy with my hand load. So he ordered another box and he switched from the 175 ELDX to the 180 hybrid. Those shot the same. So he basically contacted me and said, hey, I bought all these 195 burgers to load in my 28 Nosler, and I know now that I can't use them. Will you trade all of these 195 burgers, you know, for some of your loaded ammunition? And we did it for him. We traded him, and yeah, he's super happy shooting the 180. He ended up with a 180 VLD Hunters for Burger, and he actually sent a picture recently, and let's just say it was shooting lights out. So
good.
Sometimes, I mean, just a certain specific load that we have developed over time, and you know, the loading process, sometimes you can't get that accuracy from less than quality tools, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And we're going to touch on the tools here in a minute. You already mentioned them a little bit. And I'd certainly want to touch on the process, because I can only imagine it's repeated every single time. You mentioned a couple things earlier that I want to clear it up for listeners. What is ES and SD?
Okay, so extreme spread and standard deviation. Extreme spread would be the difference between the minimum and maximum velocities in a shot stream, whether that be 3, 5, 10, or more. I would say that the standard, if you see guys post an ES online, single digits, sometimes that, you know, that's pretty easy with a three shot group, not easy, but more often seen with a three shot group. If you get a single digit ES on a five shot group, that's impressive. The standard deviation basically means it's not an average. It is the predicted plus and minus from a kind of a middle velocity. So let's say it's an SD of five. that means if your velocity was 2950, it would range from 2955 to 2945 with a certain amount of predictability. So it's kind of your standard deviation. So two different ways to measure a single digit SD is much easier to achieve than a single digit ES, just because you're talking about middle and then moving up and down rather than the extreme spread from minimum to maximum of the velocities.
And why are those important to know what they are? Like, why, I guess what I'm saying is, why is it important that you might want to run your ammo across or over a chronograph in order to find that SD? Why is that important for a shooter to know?
Yeah, well, it's really repeatability at distance. I mean, it's not something you might notice at 100 yards. You might be able to shoot a super tight group. I mean, maybe, you know, Mickey Mouse group, three bullets touching at 100 yards with an ES of 50. But if you were to take that same ammunition out to 1,000 yards, I mean, you could run your ballistic table and your bullet trajectory and look at the difference. If you have an ES of 50, run a trajectory at 3,000 feet per second and look at your drop at 1,000 yards, and then run it at 2950 feet per second and look at your drop at 1,000. And that's really your error zone. So if there was an additional 14 inches of drop, that means in your box of ammunition that you're taking hunting, you're accepting a potential, you know, miss off target of 14 inches, whether you were at one extreme or the other. Yeah, so you really start to notice the effect of that, you know, less than optimal ammunition when you reach out to distance.
Yeah, and that's without even knowing it, because you're just buying that box of ammo from Cabela's or Walmart or whatever it is that you're shooting. So with your process that we're about to talk about here, I don't know if guarantee is the right word, but you produce ammo that has a much tighter standard deviation than what you would find from box ammo.
Yeah, for sure. The two most important factors to obtaining that single digit ESSD ammunition for us are, first and most importantly, the powder charge. And second would be neck tension. Now, the first is pretty easy to understand. It's the most accurate powder charge from one charge to the next. So with the scale setup that we use, we're able to produce kernel accurate powder throws, meaning that to the single piece of powder, not a weight of grains, but to the single piece of powder, it is the same charge from one case to the next. Once you can eliminate powder charge variance from your load, the next most important thing being neck tension. There are several steps to achieve consistent neck tension from case to case, especially on new brass, which is probably the most difficult to figure out. Neck length, the concentricity of the neck itself, in other words, how perfectly round is it, and then the diameter of that neck from one to the next, which would be the actual bullet tension, and then of course your brass ductility, which is the softness or hardness level of that brass before you load it. So those are kind of once you can achieve, you know, a perfect powder charge and very consistent neck tension, the single digit ESSD really comes along pretty easily after that.
When you say, this is my curiosity, when you say down to the kernel, have you ever used any ball powder, like any ram shot powders or anything like that? And how?
No.
Okay. I was just curious how accurate those powder dispensers are with a powder like that, or if you would even consider it. I'm trying to think of the name of those.
There's a new powder came out called Stay Ball, and we haven't had a chance to use it yet. I would imagine that it probably meters pretty consistently. Metering meaning how well it will travel through whatever straw method that you're using to weigh out your charge as it's trickling in. You know, like take N570 for example. N570 Vitvery N570 powder is huge kernels of powder, almost the size of a kernel of rice. And they simply will not pass through the auto dump on our scale system. So I have to remove the funnel on the top and remove the whole auto dump portion and scoop in by hand, you know, up to a certain amount of the charge and then let the trickler trickle in the rest. But and then being that it's so large, each one of those kernels of powder weighs 0.08 to 0.1 grains. So to achieve a 0.02 resolution or a 0.02 accurate powder charge, I have to take a razor blade and cut those kernels into thirds and then take tweezers and put those in the scoop to get those perfect powder charges that we like to have here at Unknown Munitions. So it's so when you talk about metering, I'm sure that Stayball powder would meter very, very well, you know, compared to an N570 type of powder.
Yeah. I know it does better in like what I have, which is the tube with the powder throw lever. It does a little bit better because those kernels don't have a chance to get hung up somewhere and crack and break and whatever. Anyway, so let's talk about your process start to finish. Like, you open up a box of brass, and where do you start and go through the process of how you get to loaded ammunition from there?
Okay, so we can receive brass a couple of different ways. If it's kind of a custom order for a customer, it might come in a 50 pack or 100 pack or something like this. And then our Hornady and ADG brass arrives in OEM bulk, which means it is probably a box of either 800, 1200, or 2000 pieces. And when the brass arrives in bulk, oftentimes you'll have dinged necks or imperfections in the necks due to the way it's packaged and the way it's transported, which is perfectly acceptable when you're an OEM like that. So first step, it comes out and it gets inspected, and it gets inspected several times through the process as you're putting eyes on it and it's moving around. But we run it over a carbide expander mandrel. We do use the expander, which is a 1/1000th under bullet diameter. And we've learned that after a little bit of brass spring back, after running over the mandrel, it's about 1.5 thou of neck tension, which is perfect for us. Then we'll pass over a three-way trimmer, which is going to trim the case to length, and it's going to deburr and chamfer. That is, deburr and chamfer means it's beveling the inner and outer edge of the brass. The inner bevel ensures that as you press a bullet into the case, the bullet doesn't get shaved. So if you ever push your bullet in and you feel some resistance, and maybe you see some flaking of copper or something coming up around the edge of the neck, that's because you're shaving the bullet with a sharp edge inside, and that's not good. Then the outside would be if you had a little angle on the outer portion of the neck or something, it might prevent the round from chambering properly. So that's you're deburring the outer edge as well. Then it moves over and it gets the flash holes uniformed, and if necessary, of course, quality brass doesn't need as much work with the flash hole in the primer pocket. But if it's Hornady brass, we uniform flash holes and primer pockets, and then it will get primed on the tools we're using now is the Primal Rights Competition Primer Seeder, which are just a kind of a next level tool for a reloader. It's a little pricey on a piece of equipment, but you're definitely getting what you pay for. I mean, literally, I did some videos on the Instagram story recently, but you're getting 1/1000th of an inch accuracy, primer depth from one case to the next, and super quick. But anyway, so we seat the primers. Obviously, primer depth consistency is important, like I just said. So we'll check the first one, and then maybe every 10th case or so after that. And then we also we put an extra tray on top of the pieces of brass, and we flip them over, and we actually inspect to make sure that we didn't have any flipped primers or missing primers or maybe one that kind of jumps out at you at the eye. In the beginning of our business, we had a couple complaints from customers, which we were definitely not happy with, about a missing primer. So we've put, you know, steps in place to make sure that doesn't happen again. After getting the primer seated, it goes over to the next station for receiving its powder charge. And like I said, that's done on AND FX120i scales with those are basically 0.02 grain resolution. And once they get powder charged, they head over to the bullet seating station, and that's about it. We seat the bullets. If we're measuring bullets for overall length, we basically check the overall length on the first round, and then we take a base to ogive measurement on that particular round, and then we do quality checks throughout that run, using only base to ogive. This is important because I'll talk to guys on the phone and they'll tell me how they're playing with their die, with their seating depth, trying to get the same overall length from one round to the next. And it's important to understand that your rifle doesn't care about your cartridge overall length. It only cares about your base to ogive measurement. So you can have some variance in even the best quality bullets from the distance between the ogive and the tip or the maple of the bullet, you're going to have some variance there. So it's important not to always be checking your overall length, but to make sure that your base to ogive is consistent. And we usually, we have a target of plus or minus 2,000s, but often we're plus or minus 1,000 very easily. Then they'll go through their final quality check. A-tip bullets in particular, they get polished again because they have that kind of a assembly lube on the outside of them, and they get put inside of our MTM cases, and yeah, that's about it. Bubble wrapped up for shipping.
Out the door. Man, that is quite a process. Quite a process. And I think, so I'm glad that you touched on that, the base to ogive. Because then early on when I was a new reloader, I was always measuring overall length, right? And I would get so frustrated because the overall length would vary sometimes by 3, 4, 5 thousandths, whatever. And I was getting so frustrated because I'm like, these dies are, they suck. You know, the dies aren't working right. They're not loading right. And as it turns out, it's a lot of times that's just variances in that the tips, even those like the ELD X tips or whatever. Some of those are even different when you get them. So
I would say that the A tips are probably the most consistent, kind of for obvious reasons. But that the way they form that aluminum tip, once you set that first base to ogive or coal, you can check the coal 10 rounds down the line, and it will be either dead on or within a thousandth of overall length. It's super, super consistent. When you have those kind of cup drawn bullets with the open tip, Hornady, actually ELDMs and ELDXs are very consistent as well, but the, you know, kind of the burger, open point tips, that they have some difficulties with consistency, but
yeah. And you hear a lot of times guys will talk about running a real fine drill bit or something in there to make those more uniform across the board
here. Trimming.
Yeah, and I mean
trimming,
that's just
or pinching the tips. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a whole nother process that you gotta involve. So I think that's why a lot of those plastic tip, or they're not plastic, I'm at a loss for the term, but like the A tip, I think that's why those are becoming a lot more popular, is because it's easier for that bullet company to make a uniform tip across the board. So
the polymer tips, I mean, that's what, polymer tips are very consistent as well, maybe not as consistent as the A-tip, but any polymer tipped bullet is going to have another level of consistency from, you know, from a cartridge overall length standpoint.
Yeah.
And then talking about process, I mean, we do often reload for customers. There's a difference between hand loading new ammunition and then reloading ammunition, which requires quite a few more steps in the brass prep process, due to you're bringing a piece of fired brass, you know, back to usable spec. So, you know, for our subscription service, we do offer reloading and maybe on some particular bases other than that. But we would start by bringing in the fired brass, depriming it, and we would stainless tumble it the first time. After stainless tumbling, it'll come over and if it needs a kneeling, if it's here for a kneeling, it'll get a kneel at that point, and then it will get full length size. We'll bump the shoulder around 1 or 2 thousandths, and then we will actually tumble it again to remove all of the lubricant from the case from sizing. And then once it comes out again, we basically run it through the same process as new. We'll do the expander mandrel, we'll do the trim, and then start loading it like it was new. But it's quite a few more steps in the process when we're trying to bring fired brass, you know, back to life.
Right. And we'll talk more about that process, because you guys do that a lot with your subscription program. And we're going to talk about that toward the end. One of the questions that we got from our, when we did the Instagram questions, and we got this a few times, was about the annealing process. What is annealing? Can you talk through talk about that? What is annealing, and then how do you anneal? And then specifically, there was people that wanted to know about annealing at home with a torch, mm-hmm. or should you do that? Should you not do that? How do you do it at home?
So I think probably the first part of the question is annealing necessary? And the answer is most definitely yes. And that goes back to what I was talking about the two most important parts of your reloading process, and the second one being neck tension. When you're reloading your fired brass, as that brass gets work hardened, as the neck is being blown out and then, sized back down, it gets worked and it starts to harden, and then you don't get either consistent spring back or consistent neck tension from that point. So annealing is the process. You're heating the brass to the point where, you know, a little technical, but so that the atoms can relax and return to their normal structure. So you achieve annealing of brass at temperatures, and this is kind of another hot topic, is how hot do I need to get the brass in order to anneal it properly? It actually needs to be, you know, over 800 to anneal it properly, but guys are using, you know, 750 degree Tempelac, which is fine because there's kind of there's a delay from the time that the Tempelac reacts to the temperature, and then there's still kind of a maybe like heat sink or the heat continues to rise in the brass, you know, before the Tempelac reacts. So 750 is perfect. Where should you put the Tempelac? Should be inside the neck. You don't want to be exposing the Tempelac to direct flame. So then to go back to your point, maybe at home annealing, there are guys that have been annealing using a drill for many, many years with a handheld, you know, propane torch and a drill, which is, you know, if that's what works for you, that's great. There are some things to think about when it comes to consistent annealing, and that would be, of course, the temperature that each piece of brass is reaching, you know, how long it stays in that flame and where you're pointing the flame, even the rotational speed of the case. I mean, everything is going to come into play when you talk about annealing consistency. So you can do it. It might not be the level of consistency we would look for here. When we first started, we were using an Anneli's machine, which for the money is it's a lot of machine for the money. I think they're running about $275. And what that machine is doing for you is it's allowing you to consistently apply that heat source to each case the same way. So it's going to rotate the case the same speed. It's going to keep the case in the flame the same amount of time. It's going to put the neck in the same position so that the flame is touching the neck shoulder junction at the same point. I mean, everything is basically consistent from case to case. So that's kind of the next step for the at-home annealer. And like I said, that machine for the money is a very good value. We took that machine kind of to the next level in our shop. I plumbed the propane supply in through a pressure regulator and a gauge before it got into the Neely's, and we plumbed it into a 25-pound tank. So what that enabled me to do is, along with recording the speed that the case is spinning on the machine, you could record the pressure of the propane. So with the pressure of the propane and the speed at which the case is rotating, you could, you know, introduce some repeatability from one batch to the next. So if I ran a batch for a customer 6 months ago, I could record that speed and pressure and then run the same setup the next time his brass came back in. So that kind of maybe can take it. And all that stuff is available on Amazon. I've had quite a few guys hit me up about that, actually, which hoses to buy and whatnot, the pressure regulator, the gauge, all the hoses you need to adapt from the smaller propane tank to a 25 pound, all that's available on Amazon. I've kind of been talking a lot about annealing so far, but I guess we can keep going.
No, I think that's good. I just wanted to make sure. Basically, I just wanted to get to the point that, yes, you can do it at home. There's a process for it. You can, and you should.
That's the most important part.
Yeah, okay. And there's an accurate way to do it. I'm sure you could also really mess things up if you weren't doing it properly at home. So,
oh yeah. Well, I mean, you probably won't, you know, if you don't get up to the right temperature, you're not going to achieve, you know, the relaxation of the brass that you're looking for, or maybe it's inconsistent from one case to the next. If you got one case running at 600F and the next one runs at 800, one's going to be softer than the other. So yeah, consistency is still key even when it comes to annealing. And, you know, there's kind of a step up from the annealies. You can go with a bench source, which is the same idea as annealies, but, you know, maybe a little fancier. And then the final one would be, instead of using a flame as your heat source, you could use induction, which is where the amp annealer comes in, and it's what we use now. You basically just stick your piece of brass in there, and it's using induction heat as the heat source, and it does all the work for you, which is about as good as it can get. It's a little pricey too. That's about $1,400 for the machine, so that's again maybe another level, but if that's what you're after, the best possible annealing machine, I would definitely recommend the amp.
Or you could just send all your brass to Unknown Munitions.
Oh, yeah. We'll do it for you, too. No problem.
Good. Okay, so I think we beat up the reload process pretty good. I think we talked about that. And I totally agree. I think precision ammo is certainly a lot better than some of the factory ammo that you can buy. And I think it's really cool that you're stepping into that market, because there's not that many people out there that are producing precision ammo. And there's certainly, I mean, you seem to be pretty fair on price, too. So if you're looking into that, check out Unknown Munitions. We'll give all the contact information here in a little bit. Now I just kind of wanted to BS a little bit about some of the topics that I had that I think are, well, certainly they're important to me and then to listeners. And then we have a couple of more listener questions that we'll get to here in a minute. One thing I think this is fun to talk about is, if you sprinkle the word Creedmoor on anything, does the cartridge automatically become more accurate? And so the basis of this question is that 6.5 Creedmoor came out, I don't know when it came out, years ago, right? Maybe 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago, something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was fantastic. It destroyed the 260 Remington right off the bat almost, and it really took off on its own. And then the 6 Creedmoor, and you're starting to see all these other Creedmoors. And now we have this 25 Creedmoor that popped up. I'm just curious what your thoughts are. Simply just, if you put the word Creedmoor in front of something, does it make it more accurate?
I mean, I think it's just, it was a great case design from the start. You know, it's very efficient, gets the job done, gets a certain weight class of bullets at the right velocity to be effective downrange. And Hornady did a great marketing job up front and got a lot of people on the bandwagon, a lot of interest. And I think, you know, when a cartridge comes out, if it doesn't catch on right away, it kind of slowly dies. And 6.5 Creedmoor wasn't one of those. It was a good price point for a lot of shooters. The factory match ammo was well done. It shoots well for most shooters at up to a certain distance, and it's affordable. And it just had a lot of pros going for it. And of course, anytime a good cartridge comes out that seems to be super efficient, the first thing guys want to do is wildcat it and neck it up or neck it down. And it kind of, took off from there. I think 6 Creedmoor is probably one of the more popular PRS cartridges out there. I mean, it's kind of a barrel burner, but it shoots fantastic. We load 6 Creedmoor for a couple of guys we sponsor, and they do real well with it. And, of course, 25 Creedmoor, I think, took off a little bit because of that 131 Blackjack bullet, which, again, shoots fantastic. And then, of course, 22 Creedmoor came after that. It was, just a progression down the line. Yeah, but it's an efficient little cartridge. I think once you get down to the 22 or 6 mil variants, they're a little overboard, a little bit of a barrel burner, but they do shoot fantastic for sure. It's an efficient cartridge.
Yeah, I agree. And I totally agree with you. But there really is a lot of people that are just so anti-Creedmoor, and I never know why people are, because it's a great cartridge. It is
There's
efficient.
There's always going to be that guy that has to be, anti-government, anti-this, whatever, it has to go against the grain.
Yeah, exactly. That'll never do better than my old 308 I've got in the garage, whatever. But so you also mentioned something else that I think this is a funny topic, and I laugh every time I see these debates, is the barrel burner debate. And the reason I laugh is because usually the people that you hear say things like, I would never buy a 26 Nosler or a 6 Creedmoor because it's a barrel burner, or the guys that shoot 30 rounds a year, right?
Yeah.
I never understand that argument either, because it's...
I'm totally with you.
you're never going to burn out a barrel on
It's very often asked. In fact, on the stories, guys are asking how many rounds can a 300 PRC shoot? How many rounds are you going to get out of a barrel? And I still haven't known anybody myself that's burned out a 300 PRC barrel, but guys seem to be worried about it. And I mean, I understand it from a cost standpoint. You don't want to be putting a barrel on your rifle every couple months. And I'm sure that's not what they're doing. But yeah, like you said, it's the guy that shoots 100 rounds a year that's worried about burning a barrel.
It's gotten ridiculous. And if you're shooting a 300 PRC and you're worried about burning a barrel, then you're probably using it for the wrong purpose.
Cartridge.
Yeah, you're probably using it. Are you showing up to a PRS match and running 200 rounds through your 300 PRC in a weekend? I would choose a different cartridge. The guys that are hunting are never, you're just never going to burn a barrel out. And if you do, it's 10 years, and I think you could afford a new barrel by that point. So,
yeah, no, I do know about the six Creedmoor just because some of the guys that I work with, you know, they definitely tell me that there is a limited round count for accuracy. And once you hit that, you know, it's kind of these guys are firing 200 or 300 rounds, you know, at a match on a weekend. So if a barrel is going to last you 1500 rounds and you're shooting 300 rounds a match, that means you get 5 matches out of your barrel. And that doesn't account for practice time or zeroing time and all that good stuff. So, you know, 4 or 5 matches out of a barrel, that's not very effective, I think, for cost-wise, yeah.
Right. And those, but so to my point, I think that those guys understand that, right, when they're shooting that much. They get it. They're like, yep, I'm going to have to buy a barrel every 3 or 4 months. I understand it, and they get it. But anyway, those are two topics that are always fun to watch the debate. You see it pop up on some, you know, whatever forum it is. Ah, the Creedmoor sucks. Yeah. It doesn't, not really. It's kind of a good, effective, efficient cartridge. And then barrel burners are fun to talk about.
I kind of ask them too. That'll be like the next question is, well, what cartridge have you burned a barrel out on before?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, just to kind of judge the situation. I mean, yeah. I mean, if you're a serious shooter and you had a 28 nozzler that you couldn't get tuned in and you ended up shooting 1200 rounds in load development, and then it lasted one season hunting, I can understand your point of view. You know, it's an overbore cartridge. It's going to burn a barrel. It's not something you should be out there shooting 1200 rounds a year in. Pick something else.
Exactly. Yeah. My next question was, what's your choice for a deer rifle or a big game rifle or cartridge, rather? Not necessarily the rifle, but the round itself. Or is there one that fits both of those bills, right? So some guys say, well, I've got a deer and coyote rifle, and then I have this big game rifle. Or is there something that you use for both?
That's another, you know, another hot topic. I think that there's a couple different consensus. There's the guys that want to go as small and light as possible to achieve the results they're after. And then there's the guys that want to be prepared for any situation. Those are kind of the two different guys. So I would be the guy that would like to be prepared for any situation. So I'm a big 30 fan for hunting. I'll carry around extra weight. And then, of course, you know, what can you afford to shoot? What does your equipment look like? There are so many things that come into that. But so 30 caliber would be it for me. A lot of guys are 7 mil guys. 7 mil is probably the most capable all around caliber. I mean, if you get a 7 mag with a 168 VLD hunter or a 28 nozzler with a 180 hybrid, those are just fantastic hard hitters. I mean, they're really good for everything. And I guess the other way to look at it would be, you know, if I hit that deer at 200 yards on my 300 Norma, am I going to cut it in half? You know, what is going to happen there? And I guess I don't think that far ahead. I would just be happy to hit the deer and make sure he goes down on that one shot, you know. And then there's another side too. So I hunt with my son who's 10, and you know, he took his first cow elk last season with the 300 Norma at 400 yards, and he was just a smooth operator, man. Kids get out there, it's not like us. We're all giddy and excited. You're looking at the elk and you can't seem to calm down. And he's over there all calm, you know, right in the scope, dialed in, you know, finger on the trigger, ready to pull. And can I shoot now, Dad? You know, nice and calm. And so there's so many things that come into a caliber choice, I guess. And I think I got way off topic there, but 30 caliber for us. And we shoot 300 Norma. That's kind of a get or done round for me. It's super effective. Bucks the wind. Just gets it done. Like I would take the 300 normal rifle deer hunting at a few hundred yards or elk hunting at 1,000. Either way, it's good for me.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah,
how about you? What's your preferred cartridge or caliber?
It seems like I grab my 300 Win Mag for most everything I do, unless I know that I'm just going to hunt coyotes or something, and then I'll just grab an AR. I love my 300 Win Mag. That thing always shoots, and it's going to shoot better when I start running some unknown munitions through it. But I'm building a 6.5 PRC right now to start playing around with. And
Super popular,
right? You and I have had several conversations about it, and I'm just wanting to try it out. And I don't really know, like, that's probably not going to be a dedicated hunting rifle. It's going to be a chassised up rifle, you know, and I honestly want to start playing around with shooting some, not necessarily competitions, but competition style stuff, and maybe use it for a little bit of hunting. But I'm a 30 cal guy too, man. I love my 300. I've always had a 308 that was my go-to for a long time, and I've used it many, many times. And then I got this 300 Win Mag, and it's just been lights out. That thing shoots great. So
Yeah, on the other hand, I mean, that 6.5 PRC, so the 6.5 PRC ADG Brass 156 Burger is our most popular ammunition that we sell out of the shop. And that's moving 2950 feet per second with a 156. And that's a hammer. I mean, for me, that's an elk hammer, you know, out to a certain distance, any type of deer, any type of game. That is really a go-getter kind of round for me. Like I said, super, super popular today.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I've gone back and forth about building another big 300, you know, big 30 cal, and I finally just settled on that PRC. I hear so much good things about it. I'm going to give it a shot. Why not? So I've got
definitely something to take into account too. Like we were talking about twist rate. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a 6.5 PRC rifle and it's a 1-8 twist, and you want to shoot that 156 burger at 2950, it's super important that you make sure you can stabilize any bullet with your twist of your barrel at your known velocity. Anytime guys ask me that question, I simply go on Burger Stability Calculator and plug in the numbers, and you're looking for an SG of 1.5 or greater. And that's really all you got to do. If you're wondering if that ammunition will work in your rifle, we have velocities posted on our website. So go on there, grab the velocity, and plug it in with your twist rate barrel. And that's basically the only numbers you need. Burger has a library of bullet data there. And run the numbers, see if it'll work.
Yeah. That's what I'm playing around with right now. We were texting back and forth last night about barrels and combinations and things like that. So, it's a fun project. That's really what it is. It's a project that we'll be doing it here for those that are listening to this podcast. It's going to be kind of done through podcasts and then Instagram TV and on Instagram and the whole, well, provided I can leave my house because of this stupid Corona thing, but, it's going to be a process that we're building. I'm doing it with some guys down here in Texas, and we're going to document it and log it. And I'm super excited about it.
Really most of the fun, right? Like the research part of building a rifle, cartridge research, bullet research. And that actually brings up kind of a good point too, because I think nowadays, rather than you need to build your rifle, if you're building a custom rifle, you need to build your rifle around first the bullet, so deciding what bullet you're going to want to shoot, and then cartridge. Because for example, if you wanted to shoot a 7WSM cartridge, there are very few brass options for that cartridge, and maybe it's not the brass you want to go with. Maybe you were going to build a 6.5 PRC rifle, and ADG as the only quality PRC brass manufacturer for that, maybe they're out for 12 months, and that's not going to meet the goals of your project. You know, you really need to make sure, like, you should have a couple hundred pieces of the brass you want to shoot probably before you start your project, because that, believe it or not, the brass is probably the most important part of your project. If you don't have good brass, you're not going to get the job done.
Right. And so you carry, we're kind of just diving down rabbit holes now, but I don't care because it's a fun conversation. You carry Hornady and ADG brass, is that right?
Yeah, we're not in the business of retailing any components or anything, really. The only thing we do sell is ADG brass in the retail packaging. And ADG, you know, they have, we get guys calling in all the time, hey, do you got 6.5 PRC brass or do you got this brass? They're popular. It sells out super quick. You know, the first run of 300 PRC sold out ridiculously fast. We ordered a hell of a lot more for this next run, which is they're running it right now as we speak. I did put it on the website for pre-order. So if you go on there and buy 4 cases of 300 PRC ADG brass when it comes in a few weeks, you know, that kind of secures your brass. But yeah, if you're shooting a popular cartridge and there are, you know, component availability for ammunition, it comes and goes, as we all know in this business. And like I said, that's probably one of the most important parts of your rifle build is actually securing quality brass. So you might think about that in the future. Rather than building a rifle, let's say in 7WSM, and then you get all done with your rifle, and then you decide to go online and start looking for brass. that's not the time to do it.
Yeah, like I need to be looking right now. I probably need to go click the pre-order button and get me a bunch of ADG brass for that PRC. Which will likely
that's coming in May, by the way. Yeah, we're out right now, but it's coming in May, and that's on the website for the next May run.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Let's see. So I've got a few. I have probably time for one more question, and then we've got a couple things I want to hit in the end. And this one is using match ammo for game and loading for match ammo. I think it's a fantastic one. I know a lot of guys that do it, and I know a lot of guys on the flip side of that coin that will tell you, no, don't ever do it. So I'm just kind of curious what your thought is, what your experience might be with that.
So I think the first thing to look at when you're deciding to choose a bullet, and like I just said, I mean, really building a rifle around the bullet, because if you don't get the right twist rate for the speed you're looking at pushing a certain bullet, then you've already built the wrong rifle. So again, choosing a bullet and then figuring out what cartridge can move that bullet at the velocity you need it to. And the reason that comes into play here is because if you're looking at, let's say, a Barnes TSX or a Barnes Triple Shock, because you need to run lead free and you're in California, and that's all you can run, you need to know that that bullet needs about 1,800 to 2,000 feet per second to expand properly. So that brings a lot of questions into play. So how far do I need to shoot that elk? Well, if it's 800 yards, then you need to figure out what cartridge can push that bullet at what velocity to 2,000 feet per second at the impact range of 800 yards. So there's a lot of calculations to do there, but, you know, kind of before you get started. If you're looking at, let's say, an ELDX bullet is generally looked at as a minimum expansion velocity of 1,600 feet per second. So again, take that 1,600 feet per second, work it into your ballistic calculation, and figure out what, you know, decide on your weight bullet or your caliber bullet and decide what cartridge you're going to need to push that bullet at that speed, you know, to reach out as far as you'd like to reach. So, I mean, I guess the real base of the question is match bullets for hunting, right?
Right. So you're talking, and I'll frame it up a little bit better. We're talking about the ELDX, which is thought of as a hunting bullet. Let's talk about the ELDM, which is considered to be a match bullet by Hornady.
Yeah.
But a lot of guys are just crushing game with that match bullet.
Oh yeah. Okay. So if you were to take a cross-sectional, you know, cutaway of an ELDM and an ELDX, what you're going to see on the ELDX is, as the jacket, as you creep towards the base of the bullet, the jacket will start to thicken. And then about a third of the way from the base of the bullet, so a third of the way up from the base, they call it an interlock. And what it has is two little dimples that kind of it dimples the jacket into the lead core. And what that's meant to do is to prevent the jacket from separating from the core and kind of control expansion, right? Like it's gonna, the pedals are gonna fold out as that red tip starts to push down in. From the tip, the pedals, if you could picture it in your mind, the pedals begin to fold out. And when it gets to that third from the, you know, that lower third of the bullet, the interlock is supposed to hold the jacket and the core together and then kind of stop the expansion at that point. And again, it's thicker because a hunting bullet is designed to control expansion. So you're going to generally have a thicker, stronger, sturdier bullet in a hunting line than in a match line. So if we were to look at the same cross-sectional cutaway of an ELDM, it's going to be the same thickness of the jacket all the way around that cup. So they take that cup of copper and draw it up and then fill it up with lead and then kind of close off the tip and stick the polymer tip in the end. So that thickness of that cup is going to be very similar throughout the entire length of the jacket. So what that means is that it's not controlled expansion.
Gotcha.
It also means that at extreme long range, if you're shooting your 6.5 PRC ELDX and you want to hit an elk at 1,200 yards, if you don't have that 1,600 foot per second velocity, which is required for that bullet to expand properly, then it may pencil in and pencil out, which is not what you're looking for.
No.
So where the ELDM comes into play is for that longer range hunter. Because of the thinner jacket, it's going to expand. It'll expand violently up close, but it's going to expand relatively controlled at a lower velocity than your ELDX. So if you're going to have 1,200 feet per second at that furthest distance you're willing to shoot, then that's where the ELDM would come into play. That's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah.
Try to explain it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know some guys, and in fact, my buddy that asked that question, he smoked an elk. I want to say it was at about 800 last year with an ELDM 6.5 PRC, and it didn't take but maybe two or three steps, and it piled up. So,
But that same in that same situation, if you were to shoot that elk at, let's say, 100 yards, you know, you're going to get unpredictable results from that same bullet. So when a guy calls and wants to talk about load development or a hunting round, that's kind of how we talk about it. Is if you're a 400 or 500 yard hunter, the ELDX is the perfect answer for you. You're going to have that 1600 feet per second in most cartridges. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at the 1000 to 1200 yard range, not only is the match bullet going to have a higher BC and in essence a better form of accuracy, but it's going to have that lower required velocity for expansion at that long range. You can get down into the 1200 feet per second mark, you know, lower than the ELDX, lower than, if you try to shoot a Barnes triple shock, first of all, they're not very consistent. So shooting at 1200 yards is probably not an option with a triple shock, but not only that, but you're not going to have the required velocity for proper expansion at that range. So man, so many things to think about for a hunter today when they're talking about building a rifle, choosing a cartridge, choosing a bullet. Start with the bullet and build your weapon system around that bullet for the range that you want to shoot.
With good brass.
Definitely good. And have the brass now.
Yeah, right.
Don't wait.
Right, the right.
You're not going to shoot. If you don't have a bullet and a piece of brass, you're not going to shoot your rifle.
So. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So I wanted to move in. You do some Instagram stories where you allow people to ask you questions. And they're phenomenal. You get a lot of, it's a good resource, right? If you scroll through those and you read your answers to the questions, I see a lot of the same questions though. And I'd like, what are some, like the top three or four questions that you get whenever you, you know, when you run those stories, and talk about that answer that you would give?
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of a what caliber or cartridge should I go with, whether it's choosing between two or choosing between two different calibers. That's probably the most common. And really, it's all the things we just talked about. So if you're, let's say you're going to buy a production rifle, and there's the endless debate about 300 Win Mag or 300 PRC. Just take into account, with a production rifle and you're not a reloader, what ammunition is available to me as a shooter? So as a shooter with 300 Win Mag off the shelf ammunition, for the most part, you know, it's a Sammy length of 3340. It's usually 200 grain or less options in bullets. There are a lot of different options for you, but that's what you're limited to. You're limited to that length, you know, kind of that velocity that goes along with those bullet weights. And then you take 300 PRC, which is kind of a, it was introduced as maybe a replacement for the Win Mag. You know, it's a 3.7 inch cartridge overall length. And there are larger bullets with faster velocities available to you off the shelf. So when you're choosing between two calibers or two cartridges, there's a lot of things that come up. Are you buying a production rifle or are you building a rifle? Do you reload? Do you have the ability to exceed Sammy specifications and really maximize a cartridge's, you know, ability? In a 300 Win Mag, if you have a custom rifle built with a long throat and you got a big mag box that can take a 3.7 inch, 3.6 inch Win Mag, it's just as good as a 300 PRC. It's you know, maybe better because there's more brass options available to you. So you really have to look at the complete package and all of the things that go along with that. You know, what are your, if you have an action already, is it a short action? Is it a long action? Is it a standard bolt face? Is it a magnum bolt face? Maybe you made the wrong choice in action to make the right choice that you needed in cartridge or caliber. So.
Yeah,
so that's probably the most frequently asked question. Another one would be about hand loading practices in your shop or in your garage, such as let's take neck turning, for example. Guys will ask, is neck turning necessary? Well, I can tell you that in the shop, we don't neck turn anything. I don't neck turn anything personally. We don't neck turn. We don't. Well, I've had the request from customers previously, and I do have the equipment to do it. But we don't neck turn any of our production ammunition or any of my personal ammunition. With those two things we talked about, if you can control powder charge and neck tension together and you use quality components, you will get fantastic ammunition results. So, excuse me. And for the neck turning, you know, load up 10 rounds that are not neck turned and load up 10 rounds that are neck turned and take them to the range and shoot them. That's the great thing about loading yourself. The great thing about the shooting world, you can compare things with real live data rather than relying on somebody's opinion or something that somebody else does. You know, test it yourself. If you're worried about tent stability, take your ammunition you're going to shoot hunting, right? Take a koozie that you use for like a backcountry meal, like a hot bag. Any kind of hot bag will work. Take a bunch of those big 18-hour hand warmers, four or five of them, throw them in with five rounds of your ammunition that you're going to use hunting. That bag will get to 120, 130 degrees easy. And then take a cooler with ice, take five rounds of your ammunition and put it in there. And then go to the range and measure the velocity between the 130-degree rounds and the 32-degree rounds and see what your range is. You know, if you're worried about tent stability, there's always ways to test things yourself. If you're worried about bullet expansion with your specific bullet and you keep asking other people how has it performed on game, take 10 gallon water jugs and line them up in a row at the range and shoot a bullet into them. You're gonna have a bullet in one of those water containers that you can look at how it expanded. You know, don't take other people. I'm a very data-driven type of guy. I don't like to ask other people for their experience. I really like to test things hands-on. And I believe that applies for hand loading practices as well.
Hopefully you can hit the water jugs.
Yeah, hopefully you can. I mean, you know, 100 yards at the range, yeah. Maybe put one of the little inch round orange targets right where you want to hit it, kind of at the base of the the container and get down prone and shoot. I mean, of course, that takes some work, guys. Like, but how much work and effort do we put into our hunting trips? How much money do you spend on gear? And if you're that worried about bullet expansion and performance on game, go buy 10-gallon water jugs, line them up in a row, and take a shot.
Yeah.
Figure it out for yourself. See what the bullet's going to do.
Yeah. Man, we could go on we could go on a long time about that. Before we even started recording this podcast, Jake and I talked for probably 10 minutes about that exact kind of topic. Just put that effort in there, right? Don't pick up – if you're worried about bullet expansion, don't pick up that 30-06 you zeroed 2 years ago and you haven't touched it since. At that point, you're not even doing yourself the service. Get out, shoot, get familiar with your rifle, and then start worrying about all that stuff. So
Get out there and practice.
Get out there and practice. Absolutely. Was that three or two?
The third one is always which powder to use in a cartridge with a bullet. So to that end, I would say reloading manuals are a great resource to get an idea of what powders would be in your range of burn rate. So I guess I should start off with saying that every powder has a burn rate. Faster powders are generally smaller when you look at them. They're smaller kernel size, and they're going to burn faster in smaller cartridges. As you work up towards your Magnum cartridges, you're going to want a slower powder. And there are burn rate charts all over the internet. Figure out, let's say it's 6.5 Creedmoor with H4350. And your question is, H4350 is very, very highly demanded right now. There's none available anywhere. Which alternate powder could I use? Look at the burn rate chart. Find where H4350 is. Go up three and down three and figure out which one of those powders is available to you. And go give it a try. I mean, that's really all you can do. You can look in a load data manual, Hornady, Berger, whatever, and find your bullet and cartridge, and then look at what data they've given you there for it. And that would be probably the third most asked question.
Let me follow on with that a little bit too. So if you're looking at that burn rate chart and you say you're looking at 4350, there's some other things that you probably need to take into account as well. So if you have a 26-inch barrel, you have a lot more time to burn that extra powder. So you could use correct me if I'm wrong, you could use a slower burning powder with a longer barrel. If you've got a 22-inch barrel, you could use that one that burns a little bit faster and you'll have more efficient powder burn, obviously. So,
absolutely. Yeah. As an example, I just did a powder test in 300 WSM where we loaded 300 WSM with both N565. And with N570. And even though the N570 is known as a hot rod type of powder, it did not burn completely. So was actually slower in velocity than the 565, because the 565 is a faster burning powder. It actually burned all the way through. So we had higher velocities from that. So that is a great point for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you end up with cleaner cartridges when you're all done, and it's just more efficient when you find the right one. All right. So we're going to start wrapping this up. You offer, before we do contact info and all of that stuff, I want to talk about your subscription program, because I think this is super, super cool to dudes that shoot a lot. Talk mm-hmm. about that program. I haven't seen anything else like it, and I want to make sure people understand it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the idea is, hey, buy a couple hundred rounds of premium brass ammunition from us. And premium brass means Peterson, ADG, Lapua, any of the high-end brasses that are capable of being reloaded multiple times. And once you buy those 200 rounds, we'll set up a program with you with your load data or ours. And when you're done shooting those 200 rounds, package them all back up in the same box. There's a prepaid return shipping label on there. Slap them in the box. When it shows up to our shop door, we will reload it to that same spec, charge your credit card the agreed upon amount, and we'll ship it back to you with you know, no further input needed from the customer. So this applies to hunters. This applies to competition shooters. Of course, the price varies with the components that you have. But we generally set this subscription service up, you know, in the beginning for geared towards the competition shooter who loves to shoot but doesn't have enough time to load, which is perfectly understandable. So we kind of set a price point around $269 for all of those 6.5 and smaller standard bolt face, common PRS NRL type cartridges, 6.5 47, 6.5 Creedmoor, 6 Creedmoor, you know, 6 GT, all these things these guys are shooting, and 269 is kind of that price point. I think it's affordable, it's fair, and it's really easy to use the service. You know, it's going to be a little more expensive up front to buy that more premium brass. But once you've made the investment, you can reload ADG brass probably more times than your burrow will last. That's for sure.
Yeah. I think that's super cool, because that gives them people that I don't know how PRS or NRL, I don't know how those guys keep up when they're reloading their own ammunition. Like for me to reload 250 or 200 rounds or whatever it would be for a match, I can't, man, that would take me a week just focusing on doing it. Yeah. And then it's time to go shoot again. And then you come home and brass.
I'll tell you what, dude, they're up the night before. They're up the night before the competition when they should be sleeping, so they shoot well the next day. They're loading all night long to go out and blow through 300 rounds, you know, on a weekend. And everybody's busy. Everybody's working 8-10 hours a day, Monday through Friday. They want to shoot the match Saturday, Sunday. Where is the time to reload? And that's where I'm trying to fill that little hole in the market. You know, PRS and NRL is hugely popular, and more people are joining on every day. So if you're interested in the subscription service, hit us up. Give us a call.
Well, there you go. What's that contact info so people can get in touch with you?
Yeah, so we have probably our sole marketing kind of platform is Instagram. We're on there, and if you go to contact in the Instagram profile, it's got our phone number and email there. So it's 208-262-9668. And then our email would be sales@unknownmunitions.com. Instagram is just Unknown Munitions, and our website is www.unknownmunitions.com. So pretty straightforward. It's no fancy website or anything like that. Everything, that was one good thing about the new name is that everything was available. So
yeah, that makes it easy. Yeah. So Unknown Munitions everywhere you go, check them out.
Yeah. Unknownmunitions.com, Unknown Munitions on Instagram, and sales@unknownmunitions.com.
Yep. And everything's pretty straightforward and laid out on the website. So if you want to go on there, you want to buy something, you go to ammunition, you go to buy ammunition, and it has calibers and everything. You select it.
Yeah.
It's easy.
That's one thing I get asked quite a bit is, I'm really trying to make production loads for all the stuff that guys like, cause everybody likes to click and buy, which is perfectly understandable. But if you don't see what you're looking for, don't hesitate to either fill out that hand loading request form or to give us a call. We will basically work with you on anything, even if it's a cartridge that's not listed. We're here to help. So,
yep. And just really quick, I wanted to talk briefly about the hand loading request form, because it looks pretty straightforward to me. So if I've got a bullet in there, a dummy round that was pre-made, you know, I have it for a particular rifle. I can do all the measurements on that, and I can put those measurements and the powder in the bullet that I use for that cartridge on that order form, send it to you, and that's what I get in return.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you can even just, if you have a round you want duplicated, the only two things I would have to know from you is the powder type and the primer type. And I can literally reverse engineer and duplicate anything you send me, just as long as you know those two things. I can't really tell, you know, what the powder is from one type to another, but I can pull your bullet, weigh your powder, and of course, first taking overall length and based OJAV measurements from your round, and we got no problem duplicating it.
Nice. Very nice. All right. So check them out, Unknown Munitions. Jake, I appreciate you coming on. Tons and tons of good information. And if you're looking for more information from Unknown Munitions, I recommend that you jump in and follow them on Instagram, of course, and then watch for those questions and answers, because you get a lot of questions. Like sometimes.
Well, I try to do it every Saturday now. Trying to, you know, Instagram, people love consistency when it comes to social media. So I've been trying to do that every Saturday. Sometimes it might be on a Sunday instead, but usually every weekend. The shop's a little bit slower, and I have the opportunity to help people out. So you can look for that on the weekends for sure, either Saturday or Sunday.
Awesome. All right, Jake, thanks for coming on, man.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Yep, out of here. All right, I wanted to say thanks to Jake for coming on. Tons of good information in there. Like I said in the beginning, it's amazing to me that somebody takes that time and takes the care to load up ammo that's that precise. And I can't wait to get my hands on it, on the stuff that I ordered from him. In fact, by the time this podcast rolls out, I will likely have received my ammo but not shot it yet. Due to social distancing, I don't think many of the shooting ranges are open here where I'm at in San Antonio. Anyway, thanks to Jake. Thanks to Unknown Munitions. Jump over and check them out. Unknownmunitions.com, at Unknown Munitions on Instagram. It's all linked in the podcast description. Check it out. See what he can offer you. And if he doesn't have a caliber, if he doesn't have something that you're looking for, just give him a call or hit him up on Instagram. He's very quick to respond and very good about that. So reach out to him. That's all I got. Again, thanks to Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting, Go Hunt, and Onyx for being sponsors of this podcast. And thanks to Sportsman's Nation for making it possible to put us for hosting our podcast. That's all I got. Y'all have a wonderful week. Thanks for listening.